This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Gamley, and it's time for the New Hampshire News Recap. Energy industry representatives and state officials gathered this week in Portsmouth to begin to shape a plan for more nuclear development in New Hampshire. This comes after Governor Kelly Ayotte directed the Department of Energy to create a roadmap to generate more nuclear power earlier this spring. NHPR reporter Kate Dario went to that nuclear energy conference this week and spoke with people there, and she joins us now over Zoom. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Rick.
So remind us why Governor Ayotte wants New Hampshire to generate more nuclear power.
Yeah, so, you know, Governor Ayotte has been talking about ways to reduce costs for ratepayers for a while now, and she sees nuclear energy generated in the state as a way to do that. She has said that nuclear power offers an alternative to fossil fuels as a way to reduce regional greenhouse gas emissions while also cutting costs for consumers across New Hampshire and also as a more reliable option than some other energy sources.
Okay, of course, we do have, the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant here in New Hampshire. How much nuclear energy does New Hampshire currently generate and where does it go?
Yeah, so New Hampshire is a net energy exporter, and a lot of that can be attributed to Seabrook, which generates over half, about 56%, officials were saying, of energy in the state. But the majority of that leaves the state, which is notable when talking about this.
Now, you were at this three-day conference in Portsmouth. How is the plan for more nuclear development in the state shaping up? What stood out to you?
Yeah, so this conference was an initial step. The governor started talking about nuclear in her State of the State address earlier this year, and she directed the Department of Energy to basically draft a, quote, roadmap in March, and this conference was part of that. So what I thought was interesting is how many speakers really touted nuclear as an affordable energy and really touted New Hampshire as a place that could be kind of on the vanguard of this moment, which they're saying is a resurgence in interest in nuclear energy as an alternative to fossil fuels and as something that could help with the energy transition. And a lot of speakers framed the state as a place that could really benefit from this effort.
Well, how practical is it really? I mean, what do we know about what nuclear energy could look like here in New Hampshire? How are we talking about another full nuclear power plant built somewhere in the state?
Yeah, so basically a lot of the focus of this conference was on emerging nuclear technologies. You were hearing about things called small nuclear reactors, which are a new type of nuclear power generators that people say are more reliable and less risky than traditional nuclear power plants. But there's still a lot unknown about exactly how soon these technologies will be able to be deployed at scale. People say we're still years away from that. And it's also something that people, you know, aren't unified in exactly identifying exactly how clean nuclear is. You know, there's research that shows that combining nuclear with other sources is a way to cost effectively, you know, clean up and help decarbonize the power grid. But there's a lot of concerns about pollution associated with nuclear power, not just, you know, the potential of, you know, the harm from this type of power, but, you know, things, uranium mining raises environmental justice concerns. You know, there's concrete, you know, has environmental concerns, and that's needed to build these sorts of plants. So there's a lot kind of up in the air about what it would look like to feasibly bring more nuclear power generation to New Hampshire and what the exact impact would be here on the grid and for ratepayers and for residents.
Well, yeah, there was a public comment period, I know, yesterday at the conference. What were people saying? I mean, I imagine there were some people for and some opposition as well.
Yeah, exactly. It was very mixed, which is interesting. You know, I think sometimes when you go to public comments section discussions, they can be more unified, and at every kind of speaker that went up to talk, you know, we weren't sure exactly what they were going to say. A lot of people were excited about this and, you know, really were saying that they thought that this could really, again, help New Hampshire from an economic perspective. Other people raised, you know, the traditional concerns that people have about nuclear, about, you know, risks for people living near these power generation stations, and the potential environmental harm that could bring. And also people said that nuclear energy is not as effective at reducing energy rates for consumers as people were making it seem. So it was a very mixed comment period, which was interesting.
Well, that's an interesting point because, New Hampshire has some of the highest electricity rates in the country. You pointed out in the beginning here that we're actually an energy exporter. So staying on the topic of rates here, you've been looking into utility rate changes coming up this summer. What have you learned there?
Yeah, so just to remind listeners, rate changes happen twice a year in the winter and in the summer. So in New Hampshire, that will be happening in August. And basically, what we've been hearing is that they're going to go up, especially for people who are consumers of investor-owned utilities. They've had some losses over the recent years, and rates need to go up to cover those losses. So people can expect a jump in their energy bills, which a lot of consumers for years have been saying are already high. The Community Power Coalition of New Hampshire are announcing their rates during their meeting today. So that is something to stay tuned for to see exactly how those will compare to investor-owned utilities.
All right. Well, I don't want to end on that note. I want to end on a high note here. We're nearing the end of June. It's strawberry picking season. I know, Kate, that you recently called up a couple of farmers around the state to see how the spring crop has been so far. What are they saying?
Yeah, so people seem pretty pleased with the crop this year. If people remember, a drought started across the state in the late summer last year, and it was a difficult growing season. Strawberries were before that, but just, farmers are always subject to kind of changing weather. So I think people were a little bit nervous going into this spring. But basically, across the state, people have said that it's been a pretty reliable and mild spring that has resulted in a strong crop. So a lot of people are happy about that.
Good news if you want to go out and do some strawberry picking this weekend. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you, Rick.
NHPR's Kate Dario. You can find more of Kate's reporting on NHPR.org. Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate met this week for their first debate in Hampton. John E. Sununu and Scott Brown, both making their cases before a large crowd full of party activists. NHPR's senior political reporter Josh Rogers was there, and he joins us now in the studio. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Rick.
So what are your main takeaways from this first Senate debate?
Well, I think it was good to see a discussion of issues in the flesh. So much campaigning now is effectively private, and this debate, which was put on by local Republican committees, was wide open for anyone to attend. And I think it was a decent indicator of what John E. Sununu and Scott Brown are like and the dynamics of this race, which is essentially at this point, Sununu is kind of the presumptive front runner. In some ways, he's a Republican from a different era, but he's also been endorsed by President Trump. Versus Brown, also a throwback in a way, served in as a senator for Massachusetts, obviously, ideologically. Brown might be a bit more plastic in terms of his political identity. Lots of this debate was spent pillorying likely Democratic nominee Chris Pappas, but voters certainly got a taste of what Sununu and Brown are like.
What were some of the top issues that they were talking about?
Well, there was lots of agreement on discrete issues. They both supported Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, for instance. They both say they would end birthright citizenship. They both would favor passing a federal law requiring people prove citizenship before registering to vote. They discussed Iran. Both have been leery of the U.S. funding reconstruction efforts there. Brown, tried to make this an issue, praised Trump on Iran. He noted that Sununu had said that, he probably wouldn't have favored going to war with Iran in the first place. Sununu didn't really engage him on that front. Trump's backing of Sununu, kind of hung over the space in this debate. It's, sort of an odd fit ideologically, but logical on practical grounds, given this new name recognition and track record in New Hampshire. But Brown was making the case that his lack of backing by Trump, Brown did seek Trump's endorsement, would make him more independent and give him more discretion to serve New Hampshire rather than, the Trump administration. Some of their, Sununu was stressing his record of independence as a U.S. senator years ago. And, in a lot of ways, Sununu has a more substantial record. He was three terms in Congress, a term in the Senate. Brown served, two plus years in Massachusetts before being voted out. So, there was nothing too dramatic on the issues, but it was an informative debate.
But neither cozying up to Trump.
Brown, I wouldn't say they were cozying up,
yeah.
But I mean, Sununu was interesting being endorsed by Trump. He didn't really utter Trump's name,
yeah.
And was focusing on his support in New Hampshire.
You said there was a decent crowd there. Are they fired up?
I think they were, and I think they were glad to be there. You know, a few had told me they'd never laid eyes on John E. Sununu. It's been 17 years since he was actually in the U.S. Senate. Brown is, you know, more natural gladhander. Several voters I spoke to said they could be fine with either one of these guys as a senator. You know, they just want a Republican to win. The last time New Hampshire had a Republican senator was Kelly Ayotte. That was in 2011. So that was something that was very much on the mind of these voters. And these were mostly, you know, real card-carrying members of local Republican committees.
Yeah. I want to turn to some other political news from the state this week. Three top Republicans have officially thrown their hats into the ring to be the next House Speaker. Representative Sherman Packard, who currently holds the position, said he's not pursuing another term. So Packard's running for re-election as representing Londonderry, not to be speaker. So we have Jason Osborne, House Majority Leader, Jim, remind me there of the last
Kofald.
Name. Kofald, who is Speaker pro tem right now, and Steve Smith, Deputy Speaker, all running, all top Republicans. What does this tell you about the race there?
Well, open speakers races in the New Hampshire House tend to draw a crowd. These lawmakers can all see themselves as being next in line. Jason Osborne is by far the best known and the biggest lightning rod. And also effective moving lots of conservative policies through the House. That's going to be his pitch. Kofald announced he would be seeking the speakership back in January. Conservative, but quieter, Steve Smith is kind of putting himself out there as more of an institutionalist. Speaker's races do entail a vote by the full House, so it's not simply an intra-caucus GOP thing. And we also don't know which party is going to hold the majority, so there's a lot to play out. I mean, there'll be Democrats running by the end of this. You know, in any case, with Sherman Packard hanging it up, there's definitely going to be a changing of the guard in the House.
What kind of legacy does Packard leave?
I mean, lots of conservative policies passed on his watch. I mean, he presided over a changing House. You know, it can always be kind of a barnyard or a pirate ship in the House in terms of, you know, citizen legislature and its norms of conduct. But I will say that I think that norms in the deliberative process, policy work, you know, those have slid a bit in the past several years. I mean, it's hard to necessarily blame this on Packard. You know, the circumstances under which he got the gavel, former Speaker Dick Kinch dying of COVID in office. You know, there were remote sessions. You know, now we have all the committee work being streamed on YouTube. And recently, you know, the House has been operating outside of the State House due to renovation. So, you know, Packard's presided in interesting times.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, it's always been a little bit unruly, I guess. It's kind of inside baseball, I know, but how does this leadership position affect, you know, everyday people in New Hampshire?
Well, the Speaker sets the tone in the House. The Speaker controls committee assignments, in some ways the flow of policy work. So these things affect outcomes. And you know, the citizen legislature is an unruly thing. And, you know, being Speaker is not an easy job.
No, I wouldn't say so. Thanks for joining us, Josh.
You're welcome.
You can find more of Josh's reporting, by the way, at nhpr.org. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.